Today's lesson comes from the first book of Paul written to the Corinthians. We don't know how many books Paul wrote to this church in this city. We have first and second in our scriptures, and we think there may have been at least a third. And this is true for a lot of the cities that Paul visited and established churches, and may have been many more letters. But this one is one that we have, 1 Corinthians from chapter 9. Paul says, if I proclaim the gospel, this gives me no ground for boasting. For an obligation is laid on me, and woe to me if I do not proclaim the gospel. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if not of my own will, I am entrusted with a commission. What then is my reward? Just this, that in my proclamation I may make the gospel free of charge, so that not to make full use of my rights in the gospel. For I am free with respect to all. I have made myself a slave to all, so that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became one as one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so that I may win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, so that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that I might be all things and all means saved by that means save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, so that I may share in its blessings. May God add blessing to the reading of the word. What a lesson. Paul, by the way, is the king of the run-on sentence, if you haven't noticed that. And I think we could also call this lesson Paul at his arrogant best, because he seems to be able to do all things for all people. And it's hard to be humble for Paul because he is so perfect. But if we go back to the first part of the lesson, Paul gives us a justification for the words that he uses later for trying to be all things to all people. Paul says he has an obligation to preach the gospel. In the Message version, the word is compelled, that he is compelled to preach the gospel. And he says in our lesson, in this our version, woe to me if I don't do it. So Paul senses an obligation, a duty, a responsibility to preach the gospel, to tell the good news of God's intervention into human history in the person and the life of Jesus Christ. He's entrusted with a commission to become a slave for slaves and a Jew for Jews, and to be under the law at times and outside the law at times, to be weak for the weak, and to be whatever it takes to reach everyone for the gospel. Whatever it takes, whatever he needs to do, he will do to reach others with the gospel. This is the compulsion that Paul feels. This is the obligation, the duty, the responsibility. So is this arrogance to live out this obligation, this commission, this calling, this compulsion that Paul feels to reach out with the good news of God, of God's love and God's salvation to whoever he can? Is this arrogance? I think not. Was Paul able to do this? To fulfill this commissioning? We have a pretty good record of his success, and we call them the epistles of Paul in our holy scriptures. Yes, Paul was fallible. He was a man of his time. He gets a bad rap on the way he talks about women and other things. But there is no doubt of Paul's sense of obligation and duty to tell the good news of Jesus Christ in any way he can, to whomever he can. So Paul's record of success is before us. But God love him, he did do his best in spite of his fallibilities and his faults, that he, in his own words, fought the good fight. He finished the race. He kept the faith. Paul, with all of his faults and biases, then is a role model for us, a role model of fulfilling an obligation, of taking seriously the commissioning of God. So what about us? Do we have an obligation to fulfill that same commissioning? Do we not also find a duty as we accept Christ in our life and participate in Christ's church? The world we live in, you and I, has almost an aversion to this word obligation, almost like it's a dirty word. I don't want to be obligated. I don't want any duties or commitments or pledges. I want to be free of entanglements like marriage and parenthood and membership and even citizenship. On Fridays, some of you know this, Georgiana and I tutor first graders at Wilson School in South Phoenix. And I've been at it for about 4 years. Once a week, we tutor first graders. And there are times on Friday morning, which is my day off, that I'd like to sleep in a little bit. But I have to be at school at 8 o'clock, and it's about 45 minutes away. So we do that. And it's because I feel a commitment to those kids and to the teacher. So sometimes our commitments come ahead of our pleasures and our desires. Also, I'm a big brother, and so I have a little. We call the, in big brothers, the bigs are the adults and the kids are the little. So I have a little at another school that I see on Friday as well, and really have a commitment to him because he's had people abandon him in his life, and he doesn't need me to abandon him too. And commitments keep us honest, I think. They keep me honest anyway. Because of that commitment, it drives me to fulfill it, to stay with it. Commitments and obligations push us out of our self-centeredness. They force us to do what God is calling us to do, to put the interests of other people ahead of our own. God will take care of our needs, and we have to believe that. God will take care of our needs. And it is our obligation to take care of the needs of one another. I suspect also that commitments benefit us at least as much as those to whom we are committed. Those first graders, no one is more affectionate than a first grader who trusts you. And so when George and I walk in the door, there we get three or four kids all trying to hug us at the same time. And believe me, that's far more enjoyable than having to get up in the morning and get down there. And for my little, I see growth and change. His name is David, and he's in third grade. And just to see the change in his life makes it all worthwhile. I've had another little that I had for 2 years, and he outgrew the need for a big brother, which is exactly what it's all about. So God calls us to commit our lives to living the good news of Jesus Christ, to love and to give and to serve. We are called to love when love is hard, to love those who are unloved by their neighbors because of their race or their national origin or their sexual orientation, to love others who are condemned by these neighbors and friends. To love when we are taught to hate. George and I live in Central Phoenix, and we have a homeless lady who lives about two blocks away. And yesterday we went down to Costco and we got some stuff, and we're going to make up little food bags to give to her because she's out there just at night, and then she disappears during the day, and then the next morning we see her again. We've been driving by her far too many times and not tried to help her. But commitment calls us to do things like that. Church of the Palms has commitments fulfilling all the time. That one of those is that we welcome into our church people who have been rejected by other churches and even other whole denominations just for being who they are. And we're committed to that, and that's a wonderful thing. God calls us also to giving. Giving of our time and our money and our energy and our skills and our talents, to give out of thanksgiving for what we have received, to give trusting that we will in return receive in even greater abundance. I had a couple in one of my churches in California who gave so much to the church, the IRS audited them. And that's the only question they had, is how can you claim to give this much to your church? But I knew that they did. I didn't know how much, but I knew them. And they would open their home, believe it or not, they would open their home to homeless people to sleep in their home. This was a few years ago. I would pray that they might still do that in this day. That's the kind of generosity and the giving that we're called to commit ourselves to. And we do that in our church. I was so impressed in the annual report at our annual meeting yesterday about how long the special purposes funds are, all those wonderful things that you give your money to, that you support with your giving and with your time and your energy. That's the kind of giving that God calls us to. And we're called to committed to serving, to loving, to giving, and to serving, to take the time and the effort to interact with the people in our world, to interact with the people who need a loving touch from God. On Friday, we did the Pledge of Allegiance with my first graders, and I had this little girl, you know, does your dog kind of lean up against you? They just want that. Well, that's what she did. Just kind of leaned up like that, just to feel another person's presence. Sometimes that's all it is. And at Church of the Palms, we have our Thanksgiving dinner where we give and we serve. And we have our Palms service group that gives and serves. And our Christmas family and other projects where we not only give of our resources, but we give of ourselves. That's the kind of giving. That's the kind of commitment that God calls us to. And it's never easy committing ourselves, making commitments. We have to fight our own fears and doubts about ourselves and about what God is actually calling us to do. So if Paul is a role model for accepting commitments and obligations, does that make us arrogant too? Do we think we can be all things to all people? Trying to be just that can lead to disappointment. But true commitment pushes us forward anyway. So let us commit ourselves then to this greater task of being the good news of Jesus Christ, to being the good news of God's love as we love and we give and as we serve. Let us be peace, peace in a world of increasing suspicion and fear and violence. Let us be a calming center where God's love is experienced and shared. Let us be joy where too many of God's children are so depressed and overwhelmed by this fast-paced life that we live that joy is lost in anxiety and despair. Let us live and express the joy of knowing we are loved, every single one of us, always. And let us be hope. When Jesus' disciples knew he was leaving, he reassured them with these words, "I will be with you always, even to the close of the age." It is in that same reassurance that we are carried into our new future. When we recommit ourselves to love and to give and to serve through this family of faith, may the love and grace of Jesus always be ours on that journey. Amen.